Chapter 7. Suddenly I was on my hands and knees, struggling, unable to move. Something tight was looped around my neck. I look down and see black cords stuck through my arms and legs, holding them like chains. I look up and see a giant web, like the one in the tattoo on Hector's friend. I was caught in it. Nearby are two bodies I recognize, Weto and Caesar. But further out there are more, countless others I don't know. An endless sea of bodies, gray and still in the dark. Their eyes are closed, but minds are wide open. We're stuck in the web together. I try to free myself, but I can't move. There's no sky and no ground. Just blackness swallowing us like the ocean. I scream, but no sound comes from my mouth. "Wake up, mijo, you're dreaming." Mom's words startled me out of my sleep. I sat up and threw the blanket off my arms as if it was the web that held me. My t-shirt was soaked with sweat. My heart was pounding. "What is it, mijo?" my mom asked, turning on the light next to my bed. "Are you okay?" "I'm fine, Ma," I said, wiping my face and taking a deep breath. "Just a crazy dream." She sat at the foot of my bed. Her tired, bloodshot eyes looked like two cracked windows. Since Weto died, she seemed 10 years older, and my troubles only made her age faster. Watching her, I wished I could stop the suffering I caused, go back and redo that night at the party, or change that afternoon last July when Weto died. Mr. Mitchell was right to talk about choices, but all the ones I made were wrong. "I'm so sorry I put you through all of this, Ma," I wanted to say, but the words didn't come. Instead, I just looked at the clock to avoid her eyes. It was 3:33 a.m. "You never smile anymore, mijo," she said then. "I hardly remember what your smile looks like." "You neither, Ma." She nodded and wiped her eyes. "You're right," she said, putting her hand on my arm. "When you and Weto were babies, I swore I was going to give you both a better life than the one I had. Nothing was more important. Now?" She paused, tears slipping down her face. "I just think I failed you, failed my two babies." I couldn't stand to hear her blame herself for my mistakes. "It's not your fault, Ma," I said, forcing myself to look into her weary eyes. "You weren't on the street with Weto that day," I said, feeling the sorrow in my chest, the guilt. "He was with me." "No, don't do that, mijo. I see you walking around with the weight of the world on your shoulders, blaming yourself. You're not a parent. It's not your job to keep your kids safe. That's a mother's job," she said. I don't care what she said. I knew more than she did about what really happened to Weto. How I could have prevented everything. I hugged her then because I didn't know what else to do. She held me and cried, each tear burning my insides hotter than any fire. "I'm sorry I snapped at you last night, mijo," she said finally. "I know you are missing Weto too. It's just that I get so worried." "It's okay, Ma," I said. I felt so bad for her. She had no idea about Frankie's visit or the trouble that was brewing, and I didn't have the heart to tell her. "Martin, listen to me. I know I yell at you a lot, but there's a reason for it. It's because I love you. No matter what you think you did or what you blame yourself for, know that I love you. There's nothing more important in this world to me than you." I felt the tears in my own eyes then, tears of sorrow and guilt, tears of fear and worry. "I love you too, Ma," I said, "no matter what happens." She hugged me again, though I could see the concern on her face. Something about my words unsettled her. It almost felt like a goodbye. Maybe it was. 3 hours later, I was walking to Blueford. I hadn't slept after the talk with my mother, and I couldn't stand laying in my bed and staring at the ceiling, my mind racing with images I wished I'd never seen. Caesar crumpled on the ground, Weto bleeding in my arms, Frankie's smirk. I was so out of it when my alarm went off that I left home without a shower, without looking at the clothes I wore, without even grabbing my books. I just had to get out. On the street, I followed a group of kids making their way to school. I could hear them talking about their classes, worrying about their grades, their homework assignments. I know it ain't right, but I felt like slapping them because they were happy, because they didn't look in the mirror each morning and hate what they saw, because they could sleep at night knowing they hadn't destroyed their family. If I was Frankie, I would have done it. At my locker, I was surprised to see Teresa standing there waiting for me. Her lips were tight, and she looked like she was being forced to do something she hated. "Aren't you at the wrong locker?" I said to her. Teresa sucked her teeth and rolled her eyes. "I don't know what Vicky sees in you, but I'm here because she's my girl," Teresa said. "She's done nothing but stick up for you since you got here, and you went and hurt her yesterday. That ain't right." I cringed inside at her words. I knew I deserved the mean look she gave me, and I respected her for having the guts to stand up for her friend. She was right. Vicky did deserve better. That's why I pushed her away. "I told her what she needed to hear," I said. "No, you didn't. You were a coward who didn't even tell her anything. You need to step up and end it with her, so she stops worrying that there's something wrong with you. Just tell her it's over and show her what a jerk you are so she can move on." I hated Teresa's voice, her attitude, the look in her eyes that told me she thought I was beneath her. But there was truth in her words that stung me. Coward. Maybe I was afraid of being honest with Vicky, afraid of what she'd really think if she knew what I was about. But even if it was true, it was none of Teresa's business. "Girl, get out of my face. You don't know nothing about me," I said, reaching into my locker and grabbing my copy of Hamlet. "I know you're the worst thing that happened to her. That's all I need to know," Teresa cut back. I slammed my locker shut and headed down the hallway. I was supposed to go to biology, but I couldn't stand the idea of sitting in the class and talking about plant cells. What's the point of that? Instead, I snuck into a far corner of the library behind the magazine racks and the computer tables. Another student bundled in a thick black jacket was asleep at a work table. I ignored him, grabbed a chair, and cut my next three classes. During the time I cut biology, homeroom, and U.S. history, I read Hamlet and learned how he goes nuts planning the revenge on his dad's killer, and then starts talking to himself and snapping at everyone around him. He even chases away the sad girl that likes him. I swear, it was like the play was talking about me. I read so much, I decided to go to English class. As soon as Mr. Mitchell walked in, he announced the pop quiz. "I hope everyone read the first act of Hamlet for homework," he said as he passes the quizzes out. "Come on, Mr. Mitchell," Roiland complained. "Why always got to do this to us?" "If you know he always does it, it shouldn't be a surprise to you," Steve said. "Even Martin can figure that one out." "Enough," Mr. Mitchell said. "No more talking until the quizzes are done." Vicky turned and handed the quiz back to me. Our eyes met for a second. I wanted to talk to her, to explain, but I couldn't say anything, not with Mr. Mitchell watching us. The Hamlet quiz was easy. For the first time I could remember, I had no problem identifying who everyone was and what happened in the first act. In fact, I was the second person to finish the quiz. "You okay, Martin?" Mr. Mitchell asked when I handed my paper in. "You sure you don't want to look over it again?" A few kids snickered, like they couldn't believe someone like me could get the right answers. I looked back to see who was laughing, but no one met my gaze. During the rest of class, I stared at the back of Vicky's head and tried to listen to Mr. Mitchell's talk about how guilt destroys Hamlet. But all I kept thinking about what was coming, what I still had to face. Before class ended, I scribbled a note just in case. "Dear Vicky, you're right to be angry at me. Right to think I'm a jerk. I'm dealing with a lot right now, and I'm not sure how it's all going to turn out. I didn't want to drag you into all my problems, so I thought the best thing I could do was push you away. I never meant to hurt you. Our walk in the park was the best day I had since I came here. Your smile kept me going. Martin." P.S. Teresa may be a jerk, but she's got your back. If you see Eric, tell him I'm sorry. I folded the note and dropped it on Vicky's desk without a word. It was the last thing I wrote in Mr. Mitchell's class. Just a few hours later, my time at Blueford ended.